Sorry to dry with her hand over here on my knee. Have a little mercy on me. Sir, I'm sorry, I know.
The heart of Wisconsin's home for a huge variety of country favorites. This is Country Legends 24/7.
To work her that summer, a teenage kid so far from home. She was a lonely widow woman, hell bent to make it on her own. We were 1,000 miles from nowhere, wheat fields as far as I could see, both needing something from each other, not knowing yet what that might be. Till she came to me one evening, hot cup of coffee and a smile, in a dress that I was certain she hadn't worn in quite a while. There was a difference in her laughter, there was a softness in her eyes, and on the air there was a hunger even a boy could recognize. She had a need to feel the thunder, to chase the lightning from the sky, to watch a storm with all its wonder raging in her lover's eye. She had to ride the heat of passion like a comet burning bright, rushing along in the wind out where only dreams had been, burning both ends of the night. That summer wind was all around me, nothing between us but the night. And when I told her that I'd never, she softly whispered, "That's all right." And then I watched her hands of leather turn to velvet in a touch. There's never been another summer when I have ever learned so much. We had a need to feel the thunder, to chase the lightning from the sky, to watch a storm with all its wonder raging in each other's eyes. We had to ride the heat of passion like a comet burning bright, rushing headlong in the wind out where only dreams had been, burning both ends of the night. The sweat, the moonlight, and the lace. And I have rarely held another when I haven't seen her face. And every time I pass a wheat field, watch it dancing with the wind. Although I know it isn't real, I just can't help but feel her hungry arms again. Had a need to feel the thunder, to chase the lightning from the sky, to watch a storm with all its wonder raging in her lover's eye.
Country Legends 24/7. 105.5 FM.
Friday in the p.m. and just like every weekend, I was ready to throw down. Yeah, get a little tore up, so I called my bros up to meet me out on the town. Well, Wild Man Willie said I'd like to really, but Idol was on TV. And Ray had a date with his wife, and Nate quit drinking, but he didn't tell me. Am I the only one who wants to have fun tonight? Is there anybody else wants to have a cold beer, kick it till the morning light? If I have to raise hell all by myself, I will, but y'all, that ain't right. Yeah, it's time to get it on. Am I the only one who wants to have fun tonight?
Well, I was flying solo down at Silverado's, the joint looking like a morgue, when this country cutie with a rock and roll booty came strutting in through the door. Yelled, who wants to dance, and fired up the band with a Franklin and a shot of Patron. She looked right at me, said, what's it gonna be? Are you gonna let me party alone?
Am I the only one who wants to have fun tonight? Is there anybody out there who wants to have a cold beer, kick it till the morning light? If I have to raise hell all by myself, I will, but y'all, that ain't right. Yeah, it's time to get it on. Am I the only one who wants to have fun tonight? Come on. Yeah, am I the only one who wants to have fun tonight? Is there anybody out there who wants to have a cold beer, kick it till the morning light? If I have to raise hell all by myself, I will, but y'all, that ain't right. Yeah, it's time to get it on. Am I the only one who wants to have fun tonight? Yeah, come on, come on, get your good time on. Let's have a little fun tonight. Let's have
winners, we got losers, chain smokers and boozers, and we got yuppies, we got bikers, and we've got thirsty hitchhikers, and the girls next door dress up like movie stars. I love this bar. We got cowboys, we got truckers, broken-hearted fools and suckers, and we got hustlers, we got fighters, early birds and all-nighters, and the veterans talk about their battle scars. I love this bar. I love this bar. It's my kind of place. Just walking through the front door puts a big smile on my face. It ain't too far.
come as you are. Seen short skirts, we've got high techs, blue-collared boys and rednecks. We got lovers, lots of lookers, and I've even seen dancing girls and hookers. And we like to drink our beer from a mason jar.
keeping it country in the heart of Wisconsin. Country Legends 24/7. 105.5 FM.
Eyes so blue, your vision in white, and I've been waiting all night just to have one dance with you. Now all my dreams are coming true. I'm holding heaven in my arms tonight. Everything about you is so perfectly right. I've never been there, but I think I might be holding heaven in my arms tonight. I'm not sure where you came from, but I thank my lucky stars above that I got the chance to have a dance. But one day ain't enough. I think I'm falling in love. I'm holding heaven in my arms tonight. Everything about you is so perfectly right. I've never been there, but I think I might be holding heaven in my arms tonight.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's what's happening on this week's show.
Research shows African American women at high risk for breast cancer do less than white women when it comes to getting preventative care. What can be done to encourage this potentially life-saving care among all women?
This is a wake-up call about prevention education and the idea that cancer prevention is a thing, or that it might be possible for us to manage our risk of cancer in some ways, is a relatively new idea.
Then, want to lose your bad habits and get some good ones? A performance expert says the best way is to make tiny changes.
Some small, better behavior today often doesn't feel like a whole lot, but if you repeat those habits, all of a sudden you turn around and you have these very different results.
Those two stories and more are coming your way on this week's show. InfoTrack comes your way right after this.
So you just used bug spray in your home. Now what? Well, between the waiting and waiting for things to dry up and keeping your family away from the mess, it hits you. You could have used Zevo. Unlike other bug sprays that stick around, Zevo goes from kill to clean in seconds. Plus, it's safe for use around people and pets when used as directed. Zevo, people friendly, bug deadly.
Last year's RV trip, we met a couple with the same bumper sticker. What are the odds?
Your cousin isn't a good storyteller.
He was a podiatrist, or was it a pharmacist?
Huh, you don't say.
Oh, I can't remember.
But she owns an RV protected by Progressive, and you don't. So until you get your own RV, her stories are the most interesting stories you've ever heard.
Wow, interesting.
And when you do get your own RV, save money by bundling it with your home, auto, or other vehicles with Progressive.
Oh, anesthesiologist. He was an anesthesiologist.
Progressive Casualty
right.
Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states.
Thanks for calling Discover. This is Diego.
Hi, Diego. It's Jennifer Coolidge. You know, I just want to say your cashback match makes me feel so special. It really inspired me.
That's great. Doubling the cashback you've earned at the end of your first year is what we do.
Well, I'm doubling everything now. Double dating, double dipping, double feature, double header, double whammy. You know, basically double or nothing.
You earn, we match. Discover Cashback Match. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Holiday Sale and get 30% off paints and stains from June 28th through July 8th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
A recent study shows a disparity between African American women and white women when it comes to their pursuit of preventative breast cancer care. InfoTrack's Gina Tedesco is here with the story. Gina?
Thanks, Chris. Ohio State University says its new study is the first to look at differences in how black and white women at high risk of breast cancer make decisions on proactive prevention. And the study attempts to explain why the decisions apparently differ by race. Joining me now is Taslim Padamsi, the study's lead author and assistant professor of health services management and policy. Professor, big picture here. Although you studied women, this seems like it might be an extremely useful wake-up call for women and men of any color to educate themselves on cancer prevention, isn't it?
Yes, Gina, I think that's correct. And I think in general, this is a wake-up call about prevention education and the idea that cancer prevention is a thing, or that it might be possible for us to manage our risk of cancer in some ways, is a relatively new idea. So it's not too surprising that we are in the process of educating individuals and also healthcare providers about the idea that we need to think about cancer as something that we can prevent in some ways, or at least reduce the risk of in some ways, and how we might do that.
Some people may be uncomfortable asking questions of their doctors, but what do they say an informed patient is the best patient? What would you encourage?
I would definitely encourage patients to talk to their physicians about these things and just to remember that, you know, your physician is also a human being who has perhaps their own thoughts about these issues, and whatever you're hesitant about may also be challenging for them. So just bringing it up, if you have a concern, you can ask generally about cancer risk in your family or health risks in your family history. If you know that there are particular cancer history that you have, like say from your parents, grandparents, cousins, and so on, that's something to bring up when you're discussing family history and general health with your healthcare provider, and just say something as easy as, you know I have this kind of history in my family. Do you think this puts me at particularly important risk? Is this something I should be thinking about? Is there anything I should be doing about this? And just try to open the conversation and see what kind of information your healthcare provider might be able to give you.
And to your study now, what were some specific preventive measures that black women at high risk of cancer were less likely to take than white women?
These are findings that we were replicating from other studies, and actually they showed up just the same in our study about the actual decisions. So we know that for people at high risk of breast cancer, there are a variety of things you can do. You can have additional screenings beyond what a person at average could have, and black women are less likely to do that. You can have genetic testing if that's appropriate for you to find out exactly more information about your individual level of risk. Black women are also less likely to do that. And then for people at particularly high risk, there are options that are preventive surgeries and preventive medications. And again, our study finds, like others, that African-American women are less likely to do those things. So those are kind of the decisions. And then the really unique thing about our study is that we were able to dive much deeper because we had in-depth qualitative conversations with women to understand how women make those kinds of choices.
And tell us what you found, because this is how your study broke new ground, the first to help explain the reasons behind these racial differences.
Yeah, exactly. So we work backward from the decisions that women actually make to the layers of information and emotion and understanding that underlie those decisions in order to try to understand how the decisions are coming about and, as you said, how they may be coming about differently for different groups of women. So just backwards from the decision that you're making about a particular healthcare behavior that you might do, you, of course, have to know that that thing exists. So, for instance, you have to know that there are preventive surgeries and that they might be relevant to you if you're going to consider whether or not you're going to do that. And right away there, we found that white women were much more likely to actually be considering or doing those kinds of very specific interventions. And then backing up to the second layer, behind that specific information about preventive care options is a deeper layer of general information about managing breast cancer risk. Those ideas that risk maybe can be managed and what would that mean? And usually that involves access to a specialist or specialist type information like a genetic counselor or a breast health specialist. And many fewer of the Black women in our study had access to any kind of specialist relevant to this issue, even once. So 70% of white women in the study had seen a specialist and only 15% of Black women had, which really reduces that general level of information on which you might be making decisions.
So it boils down to being aware of the options. Black women less aware of them. White women had more opportunities and become aware of the options.
Yeah, I think awareness of the options and understanding of those options is absolutely critical. And there's another element, which is your ability to access and use those options once you know that they are there. And that's influenced by things like your financial status, whether you have insurance, gaps in insurance, whether your insurance covers a test or a procedure you'd like to have, whether you have access to specialist providers who cost more. In the United States context, all of these financial issues are really important. Also, there's some more general sort of psychological and life things. So African-American women are more likely to be dealing with other health concerns at the same time. And if you're dealing with a current health concern, you're less likely to be thinking about preventing a cancer that might happen in the future. And African-American women are less likely to have the sense that like breast cancer or breast and ovarian cancer is a specific thing that one could think about and understand as preventable, as opposed to just kind of all cancers are in general one big set. And knowing that breast and ovarian cancer may be a specific kind of risk also helps facilitate learning more specifically about what those intervention methods might be.
We're visiting with Assistant Professor Tasleem Padamsi, lead author on a groundbreaking study from Ohio State about race and preventive care for those at high risk of breast cancer. Professor, you talked about the healthcare plans. Did you find differences between coverage for African-American women versus whites? And might it explain why fewer Blacks than white women were treated by a specialist?
Yeah, this is something that we will be able to say more about in about a year when the results of our next study come in, because we have a much bigger sample of people. And so we'll be able to look at this quantitatively and actually compare the numbers in a stronger way. But from the data that we do have from this initial exploratory sample, it does look like African-American women are more likely to have a gap in their insurance or have no insurance at the current time, health insurance, and that they are more likely to have health insurance plans that cause them to not be able to do things related to their breast cancer risk. So not be able to have, say, a screening MRI, not be able to see a specialist or a genetic counselor, not be able to have a genetic test. And some of this is about what people know that their insurance will cover. And it may be that Black women also know less about their actual insurance policies. But certainly there does seem to be a strong difference that Black women are more often lacking the kind of insurance coverage they need in order to be proactive, even if they know about these things and would like to be proactive.
And you hinted at some of the logistical barriers preventing or making it harder for Black women to get preventive care. Can you drill down and list what some of those are?
For instance, if you want to have a genetic test, you need to either be able to afford it or know that your health insurance will cover it and know that you do. And then you need to be able to access a genetic counselor and somehow pay for that. And then you need to be able to get the information about how to get the test and then get a genetic test. And the more sophisticated interventions having to do with preventive surgeries and medication that are particularly for very high-risk women are even harder to access in terms of the level of information and specialist care that you need to get in to see. So that's partially about knowing that these things are in your community, which is about having your primary care provider tell you and being able to financially afford a lot of those things. And we also have whatever the interactions are like within healthcare once women are actually there. Because we know that some of these problems are not just about getting into care, they're about what happens when we are actually in care. And unfortunately, we have documented in other areas of health research a variety of racial disparities in the way that Black and white women are treated when they're actually in care, and that's probably having an effect here as well.
What are some of the specific resources that a woman can find online to research the latest in prevention options?
A couple of sources I can think of. The American Cancer Society does a lovely job of distilling the most current information into a way that regular people can read and use, and then also providing all the background. So if you go in there, you find the basics, you find what you need, great. And if you want to drill down and understand more details, you can get it from there as well. There's an organization called FORCE, which is the largest national nonprofit that is attempting to serve the needs of people at high risk of breast and ovarian cancer. And they also have a wealth of information about risk, what it might mean to be at risk, and if you are, what might some of your options be. And that kind of education can also help you facilitate those conversations with your healthcare providers when you do try to have them.
Tasleem Padamsi, Assistant Professor at Ohio State University, thank you for joining us today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you, Gina.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
Next, the secret to end bad habits and get good ones. That story, coming up.
You're listening to InfoTrack. More after this. Not to brag, but Progressive's Name Your Price tool is mankind's greatest tool ever. Even better than the wheel. Sure, without the wheel, we wouldn't have modern transportation or funny videos of dogs riding skateboards. But without the Name Your Price tool, we wouldn't have easy access to auto insurance options based on our budget. And, well, cars do need wheels. They also need insurance, and insurance never goes flat. Learn more about the greatest tool ever, the Name Your Price tool, at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states.
So you just used bug spray in your home. Now what? Well, between the waiting and waiting for things to dry up and keeping your family away from the mess, it hits you. You could have used Zevo. Unlike other bug sprays that stick around, Zevo goes from kill to clean in seconds. Plus, it's safe for use around people and pets when used as directed. Zevo, people friendly, bug deadly.
Thanks for calling Discover. This is Diego.
Hi, Diego. It's Jennifer Coolidge. You know, I just want to say your cashback match makes me feel so special. It really inspired me.
That's great. Doubling the cashback you've earned at the end of your first year is what we do.
Well, I'm doubling everything now. Double dating, double dipping, double feature, double header, double whammy. You know, basically double or nothing.
You earn, we match. Discover cashback match. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Holiday Sale and get 30% off paints and stains from June 28th through July 8th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Our next guest says if you're having trouble changing your habits, the problem isn't you, it's your system. This according to author James Clear, and his book is Atomic Habits, Tiny Changes, Remarkable Results. James, you talk about mastering tiny behaviors that lead to extraordinary results. What do you mean by that?
Well, I like to refer to habits as the compound interest of self-improvement. And what I mean by that is the same way that money multiplies through compound interest, the effects of your habits multiply as you repeat them across time. You know, if you save $100 for retirement this month, that doesn't feel like much in the beginning. It's easy to dismiss it. It's like, well, I can't retire on $100. And the same way, performing a habit, some small, better behavior today, often doesn't feel like a whole lot. You know, like what's the difference between eating a burger and fries for lunch or eating a salad? On any given day, not very much. Your body looks basically the same in the mirror. The scale doesn't really change. But if you repeat those habits for 2 or 5 or 10 years, the same way that saving for retirement for a decade or two, all of a sudden you turn around and you have these very different results based on what those daily choices were. And so I think we could summarize the impact of small habits by saying that your outcomes in life are often a lagging measure of your habits. Your bank account is a lagging measure of your financial habits. Your weight is a lagging measure of your eating habits. Your knowledge is a lagging measure of your learning and reading habits. And so in a sense, you kind of get what you repeat. And if you can capture that, the power of that, making a choice that's 1% better versus 1% worse, a small habit versus a small decline, then you can find yourself in a very different place a few years down the line.
We're talking with James Clear about his book, Atomic Habits. And one of the things you talk about is finding and fixing the causes of bad habits. How do you go about doing that?
first thing you got to do is become aware of it. A lot of the time we have habits that we're not even aware of. So, you know, people may not realize that they apologize each time before they ask a question, or they cover their mouth before they laugh, or they unplug the toaster after each use. And of course, not all those things are bad things, but my point is that once something becomes a habit, it becomes kind of invisible to us. We're a little bit blind to our behavior. And so one of the exercises that I recommend in the book is what's called a habit scorecard, where you just go through your habits in granular detail throughout the day. So it might be like, I wake up, I turn off my alarm, I check Instagram, I get out of bed, I make my bed, I take a shower, and on and on and on. And once you have that list, then you can score those habits, whether they're positive or negative or neutral. And so maybe you realize that, all right, I wake up, I turn off my alarm, yeah, that's fine, and then I check Instagram. All right, well, maybe I shouldn't be browsing social media before I've even taken a step in the morning. You know, like that, maybe that's a negative habit. And once you realize that, once you become aware of it, then you actually have a chance to change it. So, for example, you could buy an alarm on Amazon for $8 or $10, an actual alarm clock, and then start charging your phone in another room, charge it in the kitchen or in the bathroom or something. And now when you turn off the alarm, there's no screen to scroll through. And that opportunity to change that bad habit, that was only available after you became aware of it. And so I think the process of behavior change almost always starts with some form of awareness.
And that, I guess, leads into another point, which I really like, which is design your environment to make success easier. That sounds kind of like a fun activity to do.
Yeah, it can be fun. You can do it in a lot of different ways. So I like to refer to this as either environment design or choice architecture, basically, you know, restructuring your environment, the places you live and work, to make good choices more obvious. Like watching television is a good example of this. A lot of people feel like they watch too much TV or spend too much time looking at a screen. But if you walk into pretty much any living room in America, where do all the couches and chairs face? They all face the TV. So it's kind of like, what is that room designed to get you to do? And if you restructure that environment a little bit, you know, there are a variety of things you could do. You could take a chair and turn it toward a coffee table and a book instead of the screen. You could take your TV and put it inside a wall unit or a cabinet or something with doors that you are less likely to see it. You could also increase the friction of the task, you know, so you could unplug your TV after each use and only plug it back in if you can say the name of the show that you want to watch. So you're not allowed to just like turn it on and mindlessly find something. All of those are just variants of the same kind of core idea, which is you're trying to structure an environment where the good behaviors are easier and the bad behaviors are harder, where there's very little friction between you and the cues of your good habits. And there's much greater friction or more steps between you and your bad habits.
James, I'm wondering if you could perhaps share a story or two about how these techniques have helped somebody really change an ingrained habit.
Sure. Let me start by giving you one that worked positively. So I guess the ingrained habit here was procrastinating or not working out, you know, not taking care of themselves and so on. But I had a reader who ended up losing over 100 pounds. One of the first things that he did was he went to the gym, but he wasn't allowed to stay for longer than 5 minutes. So he would get in the car, drive to the gym, get out, do half an exercise, get back in the car, drive home. And he would do this like 4 or 5 days a week, and he did it for the first 6 weeks. And when I tell people that, it sounds kind of silly, you know, because it's like, well, going to the gym for 5 minutes isn't going to get you in shape. You know, like that's not, what's that going to do? But what you realize, and this is some of the power of small habits and these kind of tiny routines, is that a habit must be established before it can be improved. And so this reader, he was mastering the art of showing up. He was becoming the type of person who went to the gym every week. And once he was that type of guy, then he had a lot of opportunity to expand and improve. You know, like once you're driving to the gym all the time, you're like, well, you know, I'm going to be here anyway. Maybe I should look up the right kind of workout program to do, or get a personal trainer, or stay for 15 minutes instead of five. But it's only once you make that part of your identity, once you master the art of showing up, that you have a chance to expand and improve from there. I'll give you another one from a friend of mine who was trying to curtail the behavior of staying up too late, watching YouTube videos, browsing Netflix, just generally spending time answering email and not getting to bed. One of the strategies that he used, which I thought was great, is he bought a device called an outlet timer. And so an outlet timer is, you know, you can get it for $10 on Amazon or whatever. It's kind of like a surge protector. You plug it into the wall, and then you plug your device into the timer. But the difference is you can set the outlet timer to kill the power from that outlet at a particular time. And so this guy, he wanted to get to sleep in a reasonable hour, so he plugged his internet router into the outlet timer and set it to turn the power off at 10 p.m. each night. So it gets to 10, internet goes off, can't watch Netflix, can't browse YouTube, time to go to bed. And I love strategies like that that essentially take willpower out of the equation. Now it's not about you trying to force yourself to do the right thing or remember to stay on track. You have, in a sense, automated that little piece of the behavior and made it easier to slide into that productive power down routine.
So the book is Atomic Habits, Tiny Changes, Remarkable Results. The author, James Clear. James, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
So you just used bug spray in your home. Now what? Well, between the waiting and waiting for things to dry up and keeping your family away from the mess, it hits you. You could have used Zevo. Unlike other bug sprays that stick around, Zevo goes from kill to clean in seconds. Plus, it's safe for use around people and pets when used as directed. Zevo, people-friendly, bug-deadly.
Thanks for calling Discover. This is Diego.
Hi, Diego. It's Jennifer Coolidge. You know, I just want to say your cashback match makes me feel so special. It really inspired me.
That's great. Doubling the cashback you've earned at the end of your first year is what we do.
Well, I'm doubling everything now. Double dating, double dipping, double feature, double header, double whammy. You know, basically double or nothing.
You earn, we match. Discover cashback match. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
What's the impact of marijuana use on brain function and memory? InfoTrack's Roy Mackey is here with the story. Roy?
Thank you, Chris. Our guest is Dr. Neil Dawson from the University of Lancaster in Lancaster, England. Dr. Dawson, you and your researchers were part of a study that examined possible implications for both those who use marijuana recreationally and those who use the drug to combat things like epilepsy, multiple sclerosis, and chronic pain. What is the big headline that came from your study?
The main finding from our study is that there may actually be some negative consequences for people who either use marijuana or use cannabinoids to treat certain medical conditions. The big sort of finding in our study was that these cannabinoids, they could actually have a negative impact on the brain. They could impair memory, and we found which exact brain regions that long-term exposure to cannabinoids would impact on.
Was this a surprise to you? Because it seems this is something that's been fairly well known, that there are memory issues related to marijuana use.
Yes, it wasn't a huge surprise. We do know that long-term cannabis or marijuana use can impact on memory. But what we wanted to do in our study was really to identify which parts of the brain were particularly impacted by long-term cannabinoid exposure. And we also wanted to see if cannabis prevented the brain regions that were involved in memory from sort of talking to each other. And that's what we found.
Now, I understand that there are memory issues and also other mental health issues involved here. Is that correct?
Well, there is some evidence that links long-term use of marijuana to an increased risk of developing psychosis-like symptoms. However, it seems that that has to be in people who are actually at risk of already developing mental health problems. And we really need a lot more research in that area to truly understand how smoking marijuana or taking cannabinoids might increase someone's risk of developing mental health disorders.
How serious are these memory issues, and do you believe that they're permanent, irreversible changes to the brain?
Well, it probably depends on how old someone is, for example. So you can imagine that if you're a teenager, during your teenage years, your brain's undergoing still a lot of development. So if you were exposed to cannabinoids at that time in your development, maybe the effects of long-term cannabis use would be more pronounced than it might be in adulthood. But again, we just sort of need more research to clarify what the situation is. It may be the case that as soon as you stop cannabis consumption, after a while, maybe the brain would recover and your memory would be back to normal.
Now, there are cannabis-based products and then there's actual smoking marijuana. Did you distinguish in your study on differences there in terms of the results to memory and so forth?
We weren't able to look at that in our study because we were very focused on one particular receptor in the brain that cannabinoids can act upon. When people smoke marijuana, of course, there are a lot of different chemical compounds and cannabinoids that are present in marijuana, so it's quite a complex situation. Whereas people who are taking cannabinoids for diseases or for treatment of different types of disorders, it's probably that the compound they'll take will be much more restricted and more selective.
You're not dismissing the medical benefits of marijuana, right? You still believe that that is still a valid use?
Absolutely. We've seen evidence that cannabinoids could be useful for the treatment of diseases like severe epilepsy or for potentially for multiple sclerosis. But what we really want to do is we want to have more research in this field so that we can really empower people to make decisions either about their cannabis use, be that recreational or not. But we also want to make sure that we have a good understanding of the side effects that people who use these drugs might experience. So hopefully the idea is that we could identify the mechanisms underlying those side effects, and so we can hopefully sort of negate those side effects in people who are using cannabis for the treatment of disorders.
Do you believe there may be some synthetic versions of cannabis on the horizon that may not have these negative side effects?
Yes, there could very well be. Again, it's an area that is lacking in sufficient research, but it is potentially possible that the cannabinoids could be modified and synthetic cannabinoids could be produced that would limit the side effects that people might experience.
Dr. Neil Dawson from the University of Lancaster in Lancaster, England, thank you very much for joining us today.
It's been really a great pleasure talking to you.
For InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
And that's it for this week's show. Special thanks to this week's InfoTrack contributors, Roy Mackey and Gina Tedesco. Our internet services are provided by Pear Networks. Our executive producer is Randy Meyer, and I'm Chris Whitting. We hope you'll join us right here next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
while I'm standing here watching you, turning every head in this crowded room. The lights down low, dancing slow. Oh, if all is how you feel, and perfect's what you see, then I'd be what you mean to me. Yeah, falling's how you feel, and perfect's what you see, then I'd be what you mean to me. Be what you mean to me.
Get back. So I bought roses and her favorite wine, thinking we'd be making up in no time. But I'm parked out here on her street. Looks like the joke's on me. Sitting here, I can't believe what I just saw. Couple shadows kissing on her bedroom wall. It's looking like my plan didn't work out at all. Our break turned into broke up. So now I'm finding out how a heartbreak tastes with a silver oak 1998. Drinking cab in a solo, so yeah, I thought about taking it back to the store, 'cause it's the nicest bottle that I ever paid for. But then again, if I had that money back, I'd just find a bar and go run up a tab. I could go for a whiskey, I could go for a beer, but hell, I'm already here. Sitting here, I can't believe what I just saw. Couple shadows kissing on her bedroom wall.
WIRI Nakusa. The heart of Wisconsin's home for a huge variety of country favorites. This is Country Legends 24/7. WIRI.